You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, Jeff Ofton, consulting economist from MiBank. Thank you very much for sharing your information and your thoughts into new research about Australian households' comfortable income. About a quarter of Australian households are having less saving in their accounts for emergency purposes. They still experience a hardship. They're trying to juggle between different works just to make ends meet.
MiBank, every 6 months, does a survey of Australian households and asks them how comfortable they are about all aspects of their finances, about their assets, their debts, and their income, and their spending, and a range of other indicators of how they feel about their overall finances. And they added up a financial comfort index. And it gets rated out of 10. So somebody with a low level of financial comfort, about a third of Australians rate their own comfort at about only 3 out of 10. And the average Australian rates their financial comfort around 5.5 out of 10. And those that feel they have very high levels of comfort rate themselves 8.6 out of 10. And what you find is that there's a great deal of variation across Australian households, depending on their life stage or their income, their wealth, and whether they have a job, or with their housing tenure, or where they live. So it's a very comprehensive survey and bit of research that MiBank does into how Australians feel about their financial comfort.
High income earner or feeling more comfortable with their incomes and their saving, whereas the lower ends are pressured financially, yeah, and emotionally, and under a lot of constraints, and they have to sacrifice a lot of things and have to make ends meet. So how is this situation going to be for the next couple of years?
Well, in the last survey in mid-June, we found that financial comfort amongst people with lower levels of comfort, generally lower incomes, has deteriorated. And you find that people with low levels of cash savings, less than $100 in the bank, represent about 1 in 8 Australians. And they're doing it tough. And at the end of every week, they're spending all their money. And indeed, go without meals every now and then. And they also find that it's not unusual for them to sell some asset to buy necessities when things go awry. So the main driver is either government support, or a lot of these people that are in the workforce are looking for more hours of work. So what you find, of course, is that people that are dependent on government assistance, they have very low levels of savings because their biggest concern is about making ends meet and the rising cost of necessities. And even for those that have got a job but on lower incomes, they're worried about if they lost their job and or they're looking for more hours of work. So about a third of people on part-time and casual work are looking for more hours of work, up to over 20 hours a week. So there's significant underemployment there. So there's two broad groups here. Those that are situation will get better. One, if they could find a job and get more hours of work. And at the moment, the Australian economy is growing a little below its potential, and the unemployment rate is going sideways, and income gains are very subdued. And that's not forecast to change by the Reserve Bank or most private forecasters over the next couple of years. So they're in for this these continued financially uncomfortable times for the foreseeable future here. Over 20% of households, the global economy is one of their biggest worries. And of course, it's becoming very clear that geopolitical tensions that are about the world between US Sino and in Europe, people are getting more worried about that as they, and so are financial markets. And when we look into what people are doing with their savings at the moment, you know, that we've just had lower interest rates, and there's prospects of further cuts in official interest rates and lower loan rates. The government has just introduced income tax cut and also retained franking credits and negative gearing. But what we're seeing is that households are, if you like, saving rather than spending that extra income. So they're being a little bit more cautious. It's the paradox here. As the economy slows and people get more worried, they spend a little bit less and they increase their savings. And that, of course, means that there isn't as much spending or as many jobs being created, and that will make it tougher for others. So when the households are doing that, you'd like to see governments fill that spending gap, and hopefully on infrastructure that'll increase spending and lift productivity and generate jobs over the medium term. Yes, there's about, as I said, about 15% of Australians that are doing it very tough and struggling, and they're very dependent on extra assistance from the government, and it's not forecast right now, unless the economy was to pick up and job growth remains strong and wage increases start to flow through and extra hours worked. But current outlook, it looks like that those people that are looking for work and looking for more hours of work and it's not available, so they're very much underemployed is the economic term, are very dependent on those government allowances and increases in those government allowances to overcome some of the cost pressures that they are increasingly facing.
Under this current situation, do you think that's the government's ideas of pushing people to find work? While little assistance has been provided to them, training course that will train the career, a profession that they can find or can do into the future, are rarely available for Australians. In this case, how would Australians survive?
Well, I think that the Australian governments have done quite a poor job when it comes to training, vocational training and education here over the last 15 to 20 years. In the first part of the decade, we had a massive mining boom on and Australia ran out of tradesmen. And we actually imported, foreign workers came in, the skill migration program. And that boom went on for 10 years, and we imported skilled migrants all the time through that period. Now, here we are again. In these times, we should be investing in people's education. So when I talk about government infrastructure, I think of that as broadly as, you know, education for the in the vocational area, hospitals so that people stay healthy, and, you know, transport infrastructure so our cities stay livable and the cost of doing business and getting about cities it remains competitive. Yeah, no, a major part of this is making sure that in these times when people are struggling to get more work, they're working at getting skills and education because they'll then be ready when the jobs are there. And there are some areas of the economy where the labour market's tightening, and indeed the mining sector is an area where there's some pickup in demand.
So from your research, what recommendation should you give to Australian communities or organisation concerns or Australian government?
I think it's got messages for a wide range of stakeholders across the community. It's got that message there that remind governments and the community as a whole that there's still a lot of people, well, in national standards, but there's still a lot of people, a significant number of people, around 15% of Australians are still struggling and we should be, helping them in these times. More generally, it sort of shows that there's plenty of spare capacity in the Australian labour market. As I said, there's a great scope for people to work more. So there's a lack of demand here, and again, that's the theme that you touched on, that the Reserve Bank governor and lots of other economists, and like myself, would say, well, when interest rates are at 1%, it's not an issue for funding. It's about an issue about good ideas and investing in people, in their education, training, transport infrastructure. Australia has high energy costs when it's a rich energy exporter because we have had very bad management of our energy infrastructure. So these are just some of the things that I think we should, not waiting for things to get worse, but being ahead of the curve and getting on with it.
Yeah, but under this current situation, it seems like the government's focus more on the budget surplus and living an authenticity lifestyle. We don't have money to spend, and everyone have to help themselves in order to survive.
Well, I think this is reflecting the political debate that people think that government budgets are like household budgets and they must be balanced. Government budgets aren't like household budgets. Governments have the ability to borrow for 30 years at very low interest rates and bring forward demand and invest in the country's future and make great investments for the current and future generations. Households don't have that type of leverage, and that, I think, the political debate has lost focus on this budget fetish and should be more focused on what are the great things that Australians can do to generate jobs and wealth and strong communities, happy communities, living well. For Australian workers, the best way there is, of course, to keep on, investing in yourself and getting a good deal out of your boss. That's a matter of sitting down together and thinking about ways of to improve productivity and to generate more jobs and income for both the owners and the workers in the business. And equally, Australian workers need to think about the future of work, because there's structural things going on here with technology disrupting industries and the world being a little shaky in a geopolitical sense. So it's also a time for Australian workers to sort of keep an eye on their longer term plans about their time in the workforce. Well, for business, I think, again, at these times when the cost of capital is low and there's plenty of spare good workers in Australia, It's time to show some longer-term vision and do some investing too and making sure that they're competitive and internationally competitive because the world's getting a tougher place as geopolitical tensions rise. So I think they have to be very much focused on some of the structural changes that are occurring from technology and geopolitically, and making sure that they're winners rather than losers in these trade, financial and technology wars that appear to be breaking out. I think when it comes to business, that there's been a failure of boards and governance to make sure that all stakeholders in their businesses, their interests were balanced properly. And so I think it was largely a failure of bad governance at boards and not monitoring and making people accountable and keeping these things open and transparent so that there wasn't such poor conduct that was disclosed in the banking and financial sector by a Royal Commission. Who knew how to ask the right questions to boards and CEOs, and they had to tell the truth, and it uncovered some truths that they should have been fully aware of, but for their poor governance and poor incentives as well.
Thank you so much for your insights and your thoughts sharing with SBS Radio Hmong program consultant economist Jeff Ofton from Mi Bank.
Thank you.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.